Hey, how are you?
Good morning, Dr. Terwals. What an honor. How are
Oh,
you?
thank you.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Oh, I love the martial artist guy looking over your shoulder. Very good.
Yeah, it's been my life. And I was really excited to see you have a martial arts background as well.
Yeah, I was a real kick 'em up sort of girl.
Yeah, it's amazing. And just your story. I mean, like that's how I started going down the natural way when I was diagnosed with MS back in 2012. I found you and I was like, oh, okay, there's a way to do it naturally. And I started
There's
to
a
go
way.
down that path and I ended up never taking any medication.
Good for you. Well, you look great.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Would you mind sharing your story? I mean, if anybody, they
Oh,
should look up your
sure.
TED talk, of course, you know, but mind
Uh,
sharing?
so, so if we go back 20 years ago, I'm out walking with my wife, Jackie, a half mile from home. My left leg grows weak, dragging it. I hobble home. The neurologist says, Terry, this could be bad or really, really bad. At night, over the next 3 weeks, while I'm going through the workup, I think about my electrical face pains, these jolts of electrical current that have been getting relentlessly worse, more severe, more frequent over the last 20 years. I don't want to become disabled. So I'm praying secretly for a rapidly fatal diagnosis. 3 weeks later, I hear multiple sclerosis. I'm a physician. I do my research. I find the best MS center in the country. I see the very best physician there. I take the newest drugs. 3 years later, I hear tilt recline wheelchair. My neurologist suggests the paleo diet. After 20, and I read the papers, the research. After 20 years of being a low-fat vegetarian, I go back to eating meat. I get steadily worse. I take mitoxantrone, I take Tysabri. Nothing helps. The zingers are more frequent and more severe. My 10-year-old daughter hugs me as tears stream down my face. But am I doing all that I can? I go to PubMed night after night and I read the basic science. I decide that mitochondria are the driver of disability. I devise a supplement protocol to support my mitochondria. And the speed of my decline slows. Then I discover a study using electrical stimulation of muscles. I ask my physical therapist, can I try that? He calls it E-STIM. He says it's for athletes. It's painful. But it gives me a test session, and it does hurt bad, really bad. But when it's over, I feel great. And we add E-STIM to my physical therapy. I discover the Institute for Functional Medicine. I take their course on neurodegeneration. They talk about mitochondria, a lot of biochemistry. I have more supplements. I'm up to 18 now. And then at this time, I am so weak, I cannot sit up in a regular chair anymore. I'm beginning to have brain fog. My zingers are more frequent, more severe, far more difficult to turn off. It takes 5 days of Solu-Medrol each time it turns on. And then I have a really big aha. Actually, I'm sort of embarrassed now to think how long it took me to have this aha. What if I redesigned my paleo diet based on all those supplements I was taking to figure out where they are in the food supply? More research. And I start this new way of eating December 26, 2007. By the end of January, it's clear that my mental clarity is improving, my fatigue is less. And in February, I can sit up at the table in an ordinary chair with my family. And in March, I begin walking, first with two walking sticks, and then with one, and then with none. Then in April, I asked Jackie if she thinks I'd be able to try biking again, because I haven't biked in 6 years. And then on Mother's Day, I went to try biking. We have an emergency family meeting, and Jackie tells my big 16-year-old son to jog alongside on the left. My daughter, who's 13, to jog alongside on the right, and she'll follow. And I bike around the block. And that big 16-year-old boy, he's crying. My 13-year-old, she's crying. Jackie's crying. And I'm crying. And I cry now talking about it. Because that is when I understood that the current understanding of progressive multiple sclerosis is incomplete. And who knew how much recovery might be possible? After that, every day, I'm biking. My physical therapist has advanced my exercises. And in October, Jackie signs me up for the Courage Ride, 18.5 miles.
Wow.
And once again, when I cross that finish line, we're all crying. My kids are crying, Jackie's crying, I'm crying. And it changes how I think about disease and health, the way I practice medicine, and the focus of the research. I have now, we're in my eighth clinical trial. We have 24 published peer-reviewed papers about my program in MS. We consistently find that people can implement the stuff, that we improve quality of life, we reduce fatigue, and we often improve motor function, thinking function as well.
It's amazing. Wow. You know, it's crazy. The 2007 only, 2007. And I think I found you in 2012 when I was diagnosed. That was only 5 years later. But how much things you had already put out there for people to find you.
Yeah. You know, in 2011, we had the TED Talk that went viral. It's up to, I think, 3.8 million views. It's done really quite well. When I had my own personal recovery, I went to our local organic grocery store and I said, you know, could I talk and just sort of tell my story, how changing my diet really had a big impact on my MS symptoms. And that was very successful. I started talking to a bunch of faith-based organizations, to schools, community colleges. And then the local MS chapter wanted me to come. Their clinical advisory council interviewed me and decided that I was dangerous, that my message might cause people to reject drugs, and that it was inappropriate for an internal medicine doc to be giving MS patients guidance. So I said, well, you know, you guys do what you think is morally correct. I have to do what I think is morally correct, that I'm going to tell my story to the audiences that want to hear it. So I kept talking where I was invited.
You know, I shared with my story, but just they, you know, I went to the doctors and it was a fight medical. Every 5 years, they make you do a brain MRI and they found these lesions 5 years earlier in 2007, coincidentally. And in 2012, they didn't let me fight. I didn't pass my fight medical. And then I did some more neurological tests and then they ended up diagnosing me with multiple sclerosis and they gave me a stack of drug books or catalogs, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. And, you know, good luck. That's all, you know, treat me like my life was over. And then I was left to, figure it out. And because of my background, you kind of don't want to accept, you know, like my life is over. As I started doing research on the drugs that the catalogs, and it says it may or may not help you, but I'm sure side effects. And then so I started searching and I think I came across your TED Talk. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, my message was pretty controversial, even in the college. The College of Medicine, I had people who thought I was brilliant and people who thought I was, you know, pretty eccentric. And they wondered, you know, should I really get to do what I was doing? People were complaining. My chief of staff called me in to tell me, he said, you know, Terry, what's going on? People are complaining that you're not following the standard of care. Now, fortunately, I'd known this was going to come. So I had kept a stack of scientific papers. I brought them with me and left them with John and went through them. And he said, well, but you have to follow the standard of care. And so my response was, well, of course, John, if you send it out an email to all the faculty that we have to follow the standard of care, that we can't use the latest research to guide and inform our recommendations, of course I'll follow that. And I sat back and I smiled and I waited. And he goes, okay, I get your point. But if anyone gets hurt, you're going to go through peer reviews. Of course. But then he also said, you can't be pissing off your colleagues. So we need to teach you how to talk about this. So you're going to go work with Dr. Nisley, who runs the Complementary Alternative Medicine Clinic at the University of Iowa. And so I did get smarter about all of this. And I learned that to be very careful to say, this is an alternative to FDA-approved treatments. Mm. And I'm just going to be focused on improving how your cells run the chemistry of life. And then I'm going to watch your medication use to be sure that you're not over-medicated, and we'll simplify your medicines as is clinically appropriate. And if you want someone who can treat you conventionally for these disease states, I'll send you there. I'm just going to be focused on, you know, improving your diet and self-care. Now that message, and I was very careful to put that in the medical record and to talk in that way when I'm talking to the public, that I'm focused on improving cellular biochemistry. And then we're going to watch for side effects from your medicines, because you might become over-medicated if your cells start working better. And so I'm not dissing any of my conventional docs who are treating chronic disease through FDA-approved drugs, which is entirely appropriate. And my colleagues are okay with my, you know, message of, well, you got to eat better and do better self-care.
The standard.
I learned to play better in the sandbox.
Yeah, the standard care. You like is basically taking the medication, right? The FDA approved medication. FDA.
You know, and to get approval, you have to have at least 2 studies that show that the drug approved the target symptom or the target parameter. So those drugs are valid, and they can tell you what percentage of people will have minor side effects, major side effects. And I acknowledge that when I put you on diet and lifestyle, I can't tell you what percentage of people are going to have side effects or what percentage of people are going to respond. We don't have that kind of stuff. But I can tell you, we have a lot of research that eating a terrible diet is associated with worse health outcomes. Eating diets that have the parameters that I recommend have lower rates of obesity, diabetes, cancer, heart disease. So if you're looking for those things, the diets I talk about will do that. And we have a lot of research that exercise is really good for you. And we have a consensus statement about how much exercise we want you to do. Now, if you have chronic disease, you can't get to that same level of exercise, but we'll help you get started. And so now that I've learned how to talk about this in the context, I'm working on improving health. My conventional colleagues are working on managing your disease. And yep, keep seeing them. I don't want you to stop the drugs. We'll work on improving your health. And then you may want to very closely monitor your blood pressure to be sure that it doesn't become too low. Monitor your blood sugars to be sure it doesn't become too low. You'll probably, if things are going well for how your cells run the chemistry of life, you may well find that you need less pain medication. You may well find that if you're on a blood pressure pill, that we're needing to switch you to either smaller doses or a less potent medication. And we sometimes find that people, and you know, they do this. I try to discourage them from doing it. They're feeling really great. They have a chronic autoimmune problem. And they decide, like, I'm stopping these drugs. And I insist that you should always go back to the person who's prescribing and have the conversation with them and tell them, look, if you want to get off the drugs, you can be very clear you want to get off the drugs and make a plan for how you're going to do that. And make a plan for how you can be monitor your disease activity to know that you continue to do well.
Mm-hmm. You had mentioned, moderate intent or intent, the training, right? Exercise. Mm-hmm. And so one of my questions to you is, you know, the effect of moderate intensity training with MS. For me, I found the system called TACFIT, moderate intensity recovery based.
Yeah.
You know, and it really, you know, movement complexity, and it really brought things back online for me, helped me tremendously. I feel like giving my life back with your diet, you know. Could you say a few words on that?
All of the studies that I'm aware of, we've looked at balance training, stretching, yoga, tai chi, strength training, aerobic training, consistently, they're very beneficial. We also look at lifestyle physical activity, where you just measure the minutes of moderate activity in minutes of high intensity activity, all very beneficial. I think it comes down to what do you enjoy doing, because this is designing the daily life and the weekly life that works for you and your family. If going to a yoga class fits in, that's great. You get the social engagement. Going to dance, that's a lovely exercise. If it is jogging on the treadmill or in your neighborhood, so it's a matter of what you enjoy, what can you fit into your daily life or weekly life. And, you know, I encourage wearables, because then that gives you there a variety of devices that let you track your sleep, that let you track your activity levels, and may track your stress levels. It's so helpful, because I got a note what worked well yesterday, what did not work well yesterday, so I can reflect on, okay, was there something that made things not go well that I should avoid? And then I could look at my trends. Are my trends getting steadily better or steadily worse? And I can redesign my life so my trends keep getting better as opposed to keep getting worse.
You know, it's for MS, somebody with MS, somebody with autoimmune. I mean, just anybody live a better life, healthier life, right? These tools.
Correct. Absolutely.
Yeah. Like they talk about the number one killer is stress, right? And you're talking about, you know, how, you know, the lifestyle, being happy doing what you're doing.
You want your exercise to be enjoyable. And so if dancing is what you really enjoy, then, you know, that's your exercise, and that's great exercise. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy jogging. I'm so thrilled that I can jog again. I love being outside, having the breeze on my shoulders. It's very nice. I enjoy swimming. Again, what are the things that you enjoy doing, and how can we add more of that into your life? And we want to ensure that you're doing things that are helpful. Now, maybe you enjoy gambling. Well, gambling can become, you know, sociopathic pretty quickly. So I want to be sure that what are you enjoying that is a health promoting activity.
Yeah. You know, we had talked about, we touched on, like, you did martial arts, and myself with martial arts, and I've had a few podcasts with some martial artists, capoeirista that was started going blind, and he was diagnosed with MS, and they put him on a bunch of medications, and he found you as well, and started eating naturally. Yeah, amazing. He was in Europe at the time, a Brazilian guy, and gentleman, Mr. Shusha, give him a shout out. And he found you and started changing his diet and totally got off all the medication and started just controlling his stress levels, you know, not getting stressed out about things, but it's a diet, and then started his movement, his capoeira. He's an amazing mover, and he's been able to manage it all these years, thanks to you know, you putting your, I think probably your TED talk is really started the thing. Yeah. I wanted to ask you, my question is, like, how can I help someone with MS? Cause I get less people with jiu-jitsu messaging.
Oh my goodness. So a couple of caveats. I think martial arts, particularly if you're doing it with another person. So I'm having to read and react to their movements. So there's a lot of learning that goes on, tremendous cognitive enrichment, a lot of balance that will go on, and decline in our balance is a big issue for many with martial arts. Mm-hmm. And then we have the opportunity to have an endurance and a high intensity interval exercise. And is something called cross-lateral movements. So I'm doing something with my right hand and my left foot. That's a complex rhythmic movement that, again, is really great for neuroplasticity. Now, there are martial arts moves that we do in a very slow, precise movement pattern that, again, cross-lateral with balance movements. The one caveat that we have to be, well, a couple of caveats. I want to be careful that we're not getting concussions.
Right.
You've probably had several related to martial arts. I've had several related to martial arts. And so in my case, yes, that's the multiple sports concussions that I've had certainly put me at greater risk to develop MS and greater risk to have anxiety, depression, cognitive issues. Now, I did stop doing some aspects of my martial arts so that I would not have any further concussions. So if you do have a neurologic issue or a psychiatric issue, I think martial arts are really great, but be very careful that you're not getting more concussions, because that's really hard on your brain.
I don't know if are you familiar at all with the Gracie family in Brazilian jiu-jitsu?
No, I'm not.
Grappling, okay. Yeah, we do mainly grappling, so there's not too many striking, even though I fought professionally for a decade.
Yes,
my main background is in grappling, so we wrestle pretty much, so there's no striking.
Oh, that's pretty safe.
Yeah. So I remember when they diagnosed me, they said it wasn't from traumas to the head, you know, because I was knocked out one time pretty bad, and I was concussed, you know, many times, of course, you know, but they said there's no links, right, with those things. I don't know. I'm not sure. I was asking.
Well,
you.
We know in observational studies, we know that if you've had concussions, there's a greater risk for Alzheimer's, ALS, Parkinson's, MS.
Okay.
Does it directly cause? It's just another one of those factors that increase the risk. For MS, we have the genetics that put us at risk. We then have an infection, and literally, there are 16 different microbes that increase the risk. The vast majority of humans have had one or more infections with multiples of these organisms, but most still don't get MS. So there's a list of these other, quote, unknown environmental factors. Well, I've learned to take a very practical approach. Okay, so what are all the environmental factors that influence health? Why not simply make all of my health behaviors support making all these other environmental factors supporting health as opposed to accelerating disease? Mm-hmm. So that's where I focus on diet, stress, sleep, relationships, the health of my microbiome, time in sunlight, cool sleeping environment, you know, getting out, taking a walk early in the morning. So I acknowledge that, yep, we don't know what all those environmental factors are, but we know the environmental factors associated with health. So I chase those.
Control the things that you can't control.
Absolutely.
By your actions. Amazing.
And you, I have people address them at a pace that they can manage, and you start doing the things that look interesting to you. If where you want to, I encourage people to start with food, but I've come to realize that not everyone wants to start with food. Some people would rather start with stress, might rather start with exercise. And I've become much more accepting that we'll start with the health promoting activity that interests you, that is an activity that you're willing to start with.
My martial art background, I feel like it helped me a lot with my mindset, not accepting defeat, you know, mind over matter, these kinds of things. Could you say what are your thoughts on that, on how your mind and mindset affects your health?
Oh my goodness. We physicians have to own this a whole lot more. When we tell our patients, if you don't take these drugs, terrible things are going to happen. That's a nocebo. We're setting them up to think that they have a terrible disease and things will be terrible. We now know if we have the placebo effect. If I give you a sugar pill and say, this is going to be great for your MS, going to be great for controlling your mood, that even though it's sugar, it will probably be associated with a better mood and a better immune cell effect. And we know, so the mind is incredibly powerful. I talk deeply to my patients about understanding what is your why, what is your life's mission. So, I think about, I was having to reimagine what it meant to parent. Because I had two very young kids when I was diagnosed, age 5 and 8. I'm in a wheelchair by the time they're 11 and 8. I am like, oh my God, fearful inside of my future. And it would have been very tempting to just give in to depression and give up. But I wanted my kids to be resilient. And I knew that they were going to face really terrible things because life is messy and we'll have good times and bad times. And if I want my kids to be able to stay in through the difficult times, then they're going to have to see me doing difficult things. And so it was my mantra in my head was, okay, your kids are watching. You're going to keep doing the best you can. They're going to see you get up and do your workouts every day, even though they kept getting smaller and smaller and smaller. My kids are now 31 and 28.
Wow. 31 and 28.
So they've grown up and they talk about, the impact watching me, keep working, do my little workouts. They talked about watching me do my e-stem. They saw, how hard I was pressing on that as well. And that was incredibly powerful. I realized that the most powerful parenting that I did was the decision like, okay, your kids are watching. You're going to either model giving up when things get difficult, or you're going to model, yeah, life's a bitch, but you do the best you can anyway.
It. Wow. I have some friends that run the CHPSA. It's a Gerson Therapy, a cancer treatment hospital.
Oh yeah.
They're actually a couple of the owners are old jiu-jitsu friends of mine, and they've gone on that this path. One of the his mothers had cancer, and he saw that he couldn't get certain treatments here in the U.S. So he had to go to Mexico. And so they started doing stem cells as well, because they work with some of the best, cell doctors in the world. And so I've been kind of going down there the last couple of years. And one of the things, the treatments they do, and something that actually I've done here in the U.S. as well, you know, listening to your speech and mitochondria, and then hearing about NAD plus, trying NAD plus.
Oh yeah.
You know, and how that gives, you know, energy to your mitochondria and things like that. So I wanted to hear like a couple your thoughts on that, on NAD plus.
You know, I don't have any personal experience with NAD plus. So I can't speak directly from experience. Very interesting research. I think if you have access to it, it's certainly worth exploring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I've had really great success with it and how I felt after. And then they do it part of their stem cell treatment, the hypoxic, mesenchymal stem cells, the umbilical cord stem cells. So, very interesting.
Another sort of interesting little sidebar, you know, menstrual blood is packed with stem cells. Wow. And so there are some researchers that use menstrual blood to extract stem cells for women. And so use these vaginal cups, you know, cervical cups to collect the menstrual blood. And then the stem cells are extracted and are used as part of the stem cell replacement therapy. Very interesting stuff. Will that be, you know, become a future standard of care? I don't know. But, you know, I think it's wild.
Yeah. Just some of the things coming out, the science or technology, right? With these new, they had Mel Gibson on Joe Rogan. If you know Joe Rogan, the podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
And he talked about his dad, and so it was in Panama. And I think that's when it started to get more well known, right? These the umbilical cord stem cells, and how really helped his dad, you know, anti-aging, and not just somebody with.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of money with aging, the anti-aging. So you could go get stem cells, but you know, you and I can get stem cells another way, which I think is really easy, very accessible, and that's fasting. So you can do a water fast, or you could do a intermittent low calorie diet for 3 to 5 to 7 days, and then during the refeed, which you'd want to have a little higher protein diet, your stem cells are mobilized out of your bone marrow into your circulation. And this is leads to having, you know, this higher circulation of stem cells in these stem cell signaling molecules that then will rebuild a younger you wherever a younger you needs to be rebuilt. And so for years, I did a water fast, 1 week a month. And of course, you know, I have to admit that's pretty hard. You'd be pretty hungry by the end of the week. And then you do the refeed and like, oh my goodness, it is so energizing. My kids would laugh and say like, Mom, you keep looking younger and younger. My neurologist keeps saying, well, you're getting stronger every time. I practically get my bone mineral density. Like many folks with MS, I've taken many, many, many rounds of high-dose solumedrol. And so in 2004, I had severe osteopenia, not yet osteoporosis. So I'm quite a bit older because, you know, that was like 18 years ago. So you'd think I'd be, you know, in osteoporosis by now. But actually, you know, I keep getting denser and denser bones. And so I'm still osteopenic, but now only slightly osteopenic. I'm sure it's my whole lifestyle. It's my strength training, my vibration plate training. And my primary care, my neurologist are like, God, it is amazing what you were doing, Terry. And I feel great. You know, I jogged 20 minutes yesterday. And in 2007, I could not sit up.
In 2007. Yeah. Wow. It's they found some lesions in 2007 when I did my fight MRI for my to fight in the UFC. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the UFC, the Ultimate Fighting Championship.
No. Like, oh my God, it is so exhilarating to be in the ring competing. It is a thrilling experience. So
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. It's been an amazing journey, you know, and just finding going down this path with not passing my fight medical and being diagnosed with the MS and like my life is over, and then finding you and then just going down this healthier path, right? Like we all sit down too much, right? And we're not active enough. We don't get enough sunlight, you know? So all these things you're saying, I feel like everybody can utilize this to be happier, to live their best life, right?
To live your best life. Absolutely. And to realize that the goal is not how long I'm going to live. I want to be thriving. I want to still be doing research. I still want to have postdocs when I'm 90 and 100 that I can shape the direction of the research that they're going to go down. I want to still be giving inspiring lectures to the medical students. I want to still be hosting meals with my family, picking berries with the little people in my life, however many little people I get to still have when I'm 100 and 120. I want to still be writing papers and manuscripts. I'm making plans for how that's going to happen. And I'm doing that by, you know, being committed to eating right, delicious food, by the way, mm-hmm. And exercise, being active, doing the things that I enjoy doing.
I've seen you on some cooking shows or food shows as well.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God, it's Dr. Terry Walls on one of the shows, and you know, it was delicious food.
Yeah.
Delicious food. Looked really good.
No, and we're trying to make it more accessible to people. So I've worked with some app developers. And so we have a couple of apps now. We have the Walls Diet app. So people can get some tips on cooking and some recipes. We've created the Walls Protocol mobile app, which takes the 112 things I suggested that you do as part of your wellness journey. And we have helped with creating habits, how you can create small, discrete, actionable next steps and to be more successful. Those things are on my website to help people get started. And you know, I have this aspiration to create an epidemic of health. And if along the way, people find that they need fewer medications, that'll be quite all right.
I agree with that. I agree with that, especially these last few years with a lot of a lot of information without saying.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, wow. You know, I have a martial arts school, so I have a lot of great medical doctors, right, that train, and it's just the way the system, it seems like it is the way it's set up, the way it's set up basically, right, for people to go through. It's a business in a way, right? They're great people, great doctors, but they don't have a choice, you know, a lot of times.
Well, I guess they have a choice. I mean, a lot of medicine is now run by large organizations, and physicians are have become more like factory workers with very controlled working environment, seeing patients every 10 minutes or every 15 minutes. That's can be pretty tough. A huge level of physician burnout, very high levels of depression, very high levels of suicide, mm-hmm. and physicians as well.
Yeah, I've heard some just stories going through medical school, and I'm not just the pressure and the lack of sleep, and speaking of stress, you know,
it is hard.
Yeah. Could you talk to me about your website? and just some of the courses that you have?
So if you go to terrywahls.com, T-E-R-R-Y, Walls, W-A-H-L-S.com, we have the two apps I've mentioned, the Walls Diet app, the Walls protocol. And we also have an eSTEM course, which is great. We have, of course, the Autoimmune Intervention Mastery course, which is, all virtually online. The Radical Health Upgrade, which is a more intensive small group, 12 weeks of interaction. We have a really wonderful course, the Remyelination, which is six modules on how to create an environment to let you rebuild and repair your myelin. And we also have the opportunity to come see me and become my patient. You'd have to come to Iowa. There's a place where you can book your discovery call to learn more about the various programs that we have and how you could come be a patient. And then the other thing is I want you to screen, particularly if you have optic neuritis, clinically isolated syndrome, relapse remitting MS, or a progressive form of MS, please screen so you can get on our research registry. The active trial that I'm recruiting for right now is for people with relapsing remitting multiple sclerosis, ages 18 to 70. We are comparing a ketogenic diet, a paleolithic diet, and usual diet. We'll follow people for 3 months. You'd come see us at baseline. We would randomize you into one of those three diets. You'd come back at 3 months and come back at 24 months. And one of the hypotheses that we have, which I'm very, very excited about, is because we can measure brain volume and the change in brain volume over time, we will be able to ask the question, can improving your diet get your brain volume loss to match healthy aging?
As our
brain shrinks, we're at dramatically increased risk of cognitive decline and dementia. And we know that MS people, our brains shrink three times as fast as a healthy aging. It's my theory that improving the diet, whether it's the keto diet or the paleo diet, will get you to healthy aging. And because I know in all of our studies that people in the usual diet group, because they're in a diet study, they want to improve their diet. They improve their diet. They're not eating the standard American diet. So I'm confident that all three groups will improve. And it's quite possible that all three groups will get to healthy aging. That will be a tremendously important thing to be able to show that we can protect brain. We can protect the brain by changing what you eat. Because right now, this is one of the big reasons people are wanting to treat their disease very aggressively, because they don't want to become demented. I mean, nobody wants to become demented. And can we help people get there by improving their diet?
Yeah. I signed up for your remyelinization course.
Yeah, what do you think?
I haven't been able to attend, but you said that you guys in the email said that you guys will send the replay of it.
Yes.
You could say a few words on you know, what it's about.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So we will talk about the biology of how myelin is made, so you understand what that process looks like. Then I talk about the very exciting new drugs that are in development. And we'll explain a little bit about how tissue culture studies work, how animal studies work, and then how human studies work. Mm-hmm. And that there are some compounds that are very promising. Then in module 3, I'll go through the natural products that interact using the same molecular pathways and the same receptors that the drug studies use. Then in module 4, I'm going to discuss why all these things that work so well in tissue culture and in animals have been very, very disappointing in humans. Why does that happen? And what can we learn? Then in module 5, we'll talk about the microglia that are so important in creating a toxic environment, destroying myelin, or a reparative environment, repairing myelin, and how we can create an environment that is more calming for the microglia. And we'll focus a lot on dietary approaches in module 5. And then in module 6, we'll talk much more again about the mitochondria, why the mitochondria are being poisoned, and what we can do to prevent that poisoning, how to support the mitochondria. We'll talk more about the microglia, how to, again, nudge the microglia into more of that protective role. And then I will give a review of some of the supplements that I'm using as part of my remyelination support. So that is 6 modules, and there's ample time for Q&A. So we were going through the questions and answers. And I give an overview of our research findings as well. And then I should add that, you know, we had such success with the remyelination course. I've gone back and I've added 6 more modules.
Oh my God.
So I was just talking to my team about that I'd like to run that. We have to sort out when I can fit that into my calendar. It'll probably be later January. That will begin. And the other thing that happened is that people said when we did, 3 hours one day, 3 hours the next day, it was so much information that they would have liked to have had it one lecture a week. So I think my next round, when I do the modules 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12, I'll probably do them one module a week, because I think that's a little easier. And the kinds of things that we'll be talking about, and I'm going to have to run this from my memory, so we'll see how well I'm doing here. We'll talk about understanding the timeline of your health events and your health journey, so you can get some clues as to where things went wrong and where things are going right, so I can prioritize where I should be focusing my attention. There'll be another module on the science of behavior change and the Walls behavior change model, because what you've been hearing from me is it's about diet and lifestyle. So that means the health behaviors that we have to get a little better control over. We will also be talking about what are some of the markers that we can use, because it's very helpful to have standardized assessment tools. So what are some of the surveys, validated instruments that I could use to monitor my progress? What are some of the primary care labs that I could ask my primary care person to check and that I could follow? What are some of the more advanced functional medicine tests that I could maybe order myself through that are available online? And what are the kinds of things that I'd have to go see a functional medicine doc in order to get to access?
What are some tests that you recommend?
Well, you know, at a very basic level, I want people to know their vitamin D. Mm-hmm. There's consistently been shown that if your vitamin D is low, you're going to have a higher risk for having MS, a higher risk for relapse, higher risk for progression, conversion to the progressive phase of the illness. So getting your vitamin D to above 40, I think, has consistently been shown to have fewer relapses, less progression. So at a very least, everyone should know their vitamin D. There's also evidence that a low a lower homocysteine is helpful. If your homocysteine is high, you're going to have a greater risk for cardiovascular disease, a greater risk for heart attack, greater risk for heart failure. You'll also have greater risk for anxiety, for depression, and for neurodegeneration, so cognitive decline, Alzheimer's. The research is growing now that it's also increasing the risk for MS. So I would certainly want to know about that. Yeah, and we have millions of Americans and millions worldwide who are diabetic, who have elevated blood sugars, and they're completely unaware because there's no symptoms. We likewise have millions of Americans who have metabolic syndrome with low HDL, high triglycerides, high blood pressure, elevated abdominal circumference. Mm-hmm. And we know that if you have metabolic syndrome, you are more likely to have a more aggressive disease course. And you're more likely to have a cognitive decline. You're more likely to, it's a shorter time to exit from the workforce.
You mentioned the supplements, you know, what are the supplements that you recommend?
Well, you know, what I've done is I've combined vitamin D and vitamin K. Mm. So we have a DK combination. Mm. Again, I want everyone to be on vitamin D. I want you to also take vitamin K, because if your vitamin D level goes up, you'll absorb more vitamin D, but you'll deposit calcium onto your heart valves and blood vessel walls, and that's a problem. If you have plenty of vitamin K, you take it off the blood vessel wall and your heart valve, and you put it into your teeth and your bones where you want your calcium. Omega-3 fats, omega-6 fats are both necessary for myelin and for neurotransmitters. For many of us, we have too many omega-6, not enough omega-3. The ratios is not quite right. So having more grass-fed, grass-finished meats, wild fish will be helpful. The meta-analysis looking at the benefits of omega-3 fats have consistently found that having anywhere from 1 to 3 grams of fish oil to be associated with lower rates of relapse, lower rates of progression. I think that would be universally helpful. I've created a MS sort of basic program and a little more comprehensive program that provide a few more supplements of more sulfur amino acids that will also be helpful for the mitochondria and for brain as well.
You had mentioned earlier about intermittent fasting, and I almost intermittent fast almost every day. And then you mentioned water fasting, and I have never really, you know, I guess I water fasted when I would cut weight for a fight. Oh, yeah. For tournaments, but could you say a few words on just the benefits of water fasting?
Well, fasting is a stress on the body, and so we're going to burn up the glycogen that I've stored in my liver at first to build carbs, and then I begin mobilizing fat, and my liver will convert that into ketone bodies. And so my brain and my cells will burn these ketones for energy. Now, a little downside of water fasting is you're also going to burn some muscle. And so the older we get, you know, the muscle is so valuable. So water fasting becomes less advantageous as you age. So I'm not water fasting now. Now I do low calorie, but I'm taking protein during that fasting period to reduce the need to mobilize my muscles for the proteins. The benefits of doing that is, you know, all of life, most things in life are sort of a oscillation. So the yin and yang of life, we go through a fasting where we are repairing, and then a building where we rebuild. And so when you're fasting, there's a lot of signals going on at the cellular level to recycle cellular contents. Proteins aren't working very well. And so we are rebuilding and repairing. And then when I refeed and I have a little higher protein diet, now I'm in the rebuilding of these cells. And that's when the euthane parts come out. And again, I go back into another period of a fasting state where I am recycling poorly made cells, poorly made proteins. And then when I refeed, I'll go back and rebuild those cells. If we are in continuous growth, that's how you make cancer. If you go back and forth between the fasting, the repair, and the refeed and the rebuild, that's how you stay strong and vital.
You know, water fasting, what is the difference? And you said you water fast for a week. So
I was younger then. So I would just drink water. And I was still working out. I was still running. I was still lifting weights. Now, I couldn't do as much by the end of the week because I'm pretty tired.
But doesn't water fasting mean to not drink water?
Oh, well, that's called a dry fast.
Dry fast. Okay. Water fast means you have water. You basically, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fast, so, but you have water.
And I've never done a dry fast. Some people do dry fast. I have no direct experience with a dry fast.
Okay. Yeah, because the Muslims, like they forgot the, is it Ramadan where they don't
Ramadan, drink? Yeah.
Right. They don't eat or drink from sunrise to sundown, right? And
correct.
The interesting, you know, just the benefits is the reason why probably that happened, right? So just interesting.
You know, most of our major religions have, many of them have a period of a fasting. Of some type of purification and fasting practice.
Interesting, yeah. There's a reason, right? But that was put there. Well, you know, I wanted to just thank you for all of your work and everything that you've put out there. You know, part of me, you know, I feel like, you know, some things have happened and, you know, I was very humbled, you know, from the doctor's thing. Yeah. And I had issues walking and talking. And so I challenge myself every day to, you know, not accept and to just keep trying, right? Keep trying. But I feel like in a lot of ways, like it was a blessing in disguise because it's made me a better person. Do you feel the same with your story?
I am very blessed. I am very blessed. I've touched millions more people because I have had this experience. And I'm very grateful. And, you know, I'm even grateful for my trigeminal neuralgia. And I've had decades of immense, immense suffering from that. But now I know all the time, is my brain happy, calm? Am I microglia happy and calm or not? And so I am so blessed.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Walls. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate everything that you do. I'm excited to get into your remyelination course, you know, once I get the time. And thank you for all the work that you continue to do every day and the help that you give so many people around the world, so many people.
Okay.
Including myself. And
I'll make sure you have all of the links because I assume that you'll need some show notes for this. So I'll be sure that you have the links to share with your show notes.
Great. Thank you so much.
All right. Much love to you and your team. Bye-bye now.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.